basically everyone in Zandvoort is going to be a Max Verstappen fan, or they'll be kind of like hiding away under a Mercedes cap in the hope that they don't get in too much trouble.
And he took a second to think, and I was like, I've just told an absolute clanger. And then he went, oh, because, and then he laughed, and all the Dutch were like, ha, 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 ha. So I think that was
intelligent. Take that one to the bank. No better, no more riveting of a scene than him packing for the weekend in his closet.
Yeah.
Hi, hello. 2 weeks, 3 weeks has it been since we last got together to interview Christian Horner. We need summer breaks too here on Unlapped. Unfortunately, though, mine was not spent jumping off a lavish yacht into the deep, gorgeous blue sea. I don't know if that's how the two of you spent your summer break. Yours was a little bit more luxurious, Lawrence. Were you not in Iceland?
I was in Iceland, yeah. I've mainly come on this podcast to learn about what's been happening for the last 2 or 3 weeks, so I haven't paid any attention. So yeah, you guys let me know, and I'll try and chip in where I can.
How was Iceland?
It's fantastic. So I have some family out there. My dad's side of the family is from there, and it's a really cool place to go and visit. You do have to sacrifice jumping into blue oceans because the water is freezing cold there, unless you find one of the thermal hot spas, which are knocking around all over the country. But it's a really incredible place to go and visit, unlike anywhere else in the world. So I would thoroughly recommend, but I won't bore you with probably what I could do an hour's podcasting about Iceland.
Okay, well, we'll add it to the list. Nate, a little quieter of a summer break for you?
Yeah, it was. It was, nothing quite like Lawrence's. And Lawrence's holidays are great because you can live vicariously through his Instagram account because he's quite a keen photographer. So I'm sure you're doing the same thing, Katie. His photos are all amazing. Mine, by comparison, if I'd been taking photos of mine, it would have just been a lot of British motorways and roads and stuff. But no, it was nice. Drove around, saw a lot of friends. You know, this job, you're not always able to, you know, make too many social plans. So just nice to catch up. Went back and spent some time with my family, saw my sister. So it was nice. But yeah, I think when you get to the end of the summer break, it always feels like it's enough time. And then you think, right, let's get back to it. Cause it's, you know, it's a nice little time away. And we've kind of had two of these now, because obviously when Imola got cancelled. So I know China getting cancelled meant we had 3 weeks earlier in the year. So we've been a bit spoiled for time off this year. It's been great.
It's nice for everybody who travels around like you two at the links that you do to have a nice reset and recharge moment in the middle of the season. Clearly the drivers like it. I don't know where the hot spot is. It looks like the Mediterranean Sea, but they have to one up one another in terms of who can take the more glamorous photo on a yacht or at some private beach. Does it not feel like that?
Yeah, it feels like they're all trying to take different thirst traps, aren't they, for the audience. But I forget where it was, but I think during lockdown, maybe it was St. Tropez, but all the drivers were going to one particular venue and they kept saying they bumped into each other and stuff like that. Lawrence might remember where it is. I might have just butchered the name of that place as well. But I think they all end up in kind of one of three areas, because if you actually look at the locations, they're always kind of in the same place. So it's a damn good life, isn't it? You know,
yeah, there's been a lot of posting from Sardinia,
including
a team boss meeting between Toto Wolff, Stefano Domenicali, Flavio Briatore, and Lawrence Stroll. Well, only two are team bosses, but all very influential people in Formula One. So that would have been an interesting one to be at, to know what was going on there. But yeah, they do seem to just find these beautiful, very sunny coastlines to go and lounge around on during the summer break. But we should add as well that like all the team members get this time off, because it's enforced in Formula One that you have at least 2 weeks off in the summer, so people can go and just be normal people and spend time with their families, which I think a lot of people in F1 struggle to do for the rest of the year because it's so busy and there's so much pressure to perform. So we shouldn't mock anyone too much for going on amazing holidays, including me.
Not at all. Not at all. But I will say the one person who did not rest, it feels like all summer break, Valtteri Bottas just stays busy, does he not? I think he's here stateside in Aspen competing in all different kind of bike races.
So his idea of a holiday seems to be just pure training, unadulterated bicycle training. And it, on one occasion, dressed as Duffman from The Simpsons, which I've got a lot of time for. I don't know what the story was behind that, but looked pretty cool. Of course, his partner is a professional cyclist, so I guess it kind of goes with the territory a bit there. She follows him to a lot of motor races, and then he follows her to a lot of cycling races. But he seems to be doing pretty well. He's getting some good results over the summer. So yeah. I guess he'll just be hoping that he can do that in F1 in the second half of the year.
Which is... Like, go ahead.
Those two are a bit like Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock in that movie Speed, you know, where they have to they have to keep the bus going at 60 miles an hour, otherwise it'd just explode. They're like, we've got to keep our foot on the gas. I like it.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's a good marriage when you compliment each other like that. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. We sincerely appreciate it, and it means a great deal. It goes a long way as well for other people to be able to find Unlapped. All right, race week, finally. Feels good to be able to say that. Max looking to equal Sebastian Vettel's record of 9 consecutive wins. He gets to possibly do it at his home Grand Prix. This is a guy who obviously is getting used to breaking records early on in his career. What would you think that this would mean, Lawrence? How meaningful would it be for Max to be able to tie Sebastian Vettel's record of 9 in what is such a competitive and cutthroat sport?
It's always hard to know with Max. He doesn't seem to be that excited by records. In fact, none of the really top drivers do tend to be. Seb was one driver who was, actually. He used to really kind of get a kick out of breaking records. And I remember when he set this one, it was at the end of the 2013 season, and he won the title and then just continuously won absolutely everything. And we were about to go into a major regulation change that kicked off the Mercedes domination from 2014 onwards. And at the time, it just felt like no one else could win a Grand Prix other than Sebastian Vettel. And then, of course, that all ended the following year. So I think drivers do enjoy these records while they're going on. Of course, they love to win. But I don't know if Max is overly concerned about whether he's got the most consecutive victories. I think he'll be more concerned about making sure he wins on home soil at the Dutch Grand Prix, because I think, you know, that's a big thing for him. And he's going to have basically everyone in Zandvoort is going to be a Max Verstappen fan, or they'll be kind of like hiding away under a Mercedes cap in the hope that they don't get in too much trouble. But I think that will be the big thing for him, will just be making sure in this glorious season of his where we can basically crown him champion already, that he also has a home victory in there.
It's definitely always a sea of orange, which I think is so cool visually to be able to see on television. I'm sure it's amazing to see on the ground. Nate, you have a great story out actually about Vettel and how he drove to all European F1 races last year in an effort to decrease his carbon footprint. Obviously, we know that that was something he was extremely passionate about and vocal about as well. Do you think that Max might drive himself to Zandvoort in an Aston Martin Valkyrie, or do you think that he possibly would be pulled over?
Possibly pulled over. I think in the Netherlands, Max has to stay as airborne as possible just to avoid everybody. No, I mean, great video going around of him. Those cars just look so fast when they're inside them. It's funny with Max, isn't it? In a lot of countries, he's actually one of the guys that has a jet that he flies around to races in. And I think that I remember hearing from somebody at Red Bull last year that basically when Max got to where they were staying in, you know, Zandvoort for the race, he basically was just like, I can't really go anywhere because I just get, it's unlike anywhere else. Here, I just get completely mobbed. So I think it has that added element to him, for sure. But yeah, I mean, we were just joking, weren't we, before we started recording, that maybe him getting arrested for something might help the season, you know. But he'd probably still win the championship, but it might delay it a little more if he's not at a few races, unlikely as that is. So for anyone who doesn't know, there's a video of him. It's in Monaco, isn't it, Lawrence? I think is where he's driving.
South of France, somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, the roads look fairly familiar from when we've driven in, and, you know, some, I guess, internet sleuths have started to say that maybe he's about to be prosecuted for something, but I don't know what the rules are, but either way, it looks like I'd like to be in the car with him. That's what I know.
And in Zandvoort a couple of years ago, they changed the speed limit to 33 kilometers an hour rather than 30 kilometers an hour because Max was number 33 back then before he was world champion and he was number one. So I think even if he was caught speeding in the Netherlands, he'd probably get away with it. I think they would just change the speed limit to adapt to whatever speed he was doing.
Could you do a conversion for me? 30 kilometer.
I mean, that's very slow. 30 kilometers an hour is roughly 20 miles per hour, like that. I mean, it is slow, but increasingly that's the case in like European towns that you're down to 20 mile per hour speed limits in the center. But yeah, it was kind of fun. They changed it to 33 on all the signs.
And I can claim this is one thing that I'll be telling the grandkids in years and years to come. One of the only time I've made a driver other, because Danny Rick, you can kind of make laugh at a press session because he's basically just making fun of everyone in there anyway. You know, he's kind of going back and forth with the journalists. 2022, I asked Max, he was asked about Zandvoort, and I said, is it a press session? And I just said, I hear the speed limit's going to be 1 mile per hour this year. because obviously he's the number one. And he took a second to think, and I was like, I've just told an absolute clanger. And then he went, oh, because, and then he laughed, and all the Dutch were like, ha, 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 ha. So I think I was in Belgium.
Take that one to the bank.
Hungary last year. Yeah. I wish, you know, and I was like, oh, Netflix aren't here to record my one, my moment of brilliance. But yeah, so Katie, it's 20.5 miles per hour.
It's
so
quite slow.
Lawrence's conversion was spot on.
Nate's starting to like look around, make sure like when he asks questions is enough.
Yeah, now I'm like,
so
I'm telling
you, get my
if
moment.
I've got anything really funny, I'm like, where's the framing?
Save it.
Oh, there they are. Okay, make sure they get my good size.
I love it.
Angle round. So if you see me on next season of Netflix, I've almost certainly worked out the cameras there now.
He's orchestrated it all. Stan Bourne is always a fan favorite, as we've mentioned, with lots of opportunity to overtake at this track. Lawrence, when it comes to teams that you think will be set up to find success and have a strong weekend at Zandvoort, who would you say is at the top of your list?
Well, it's got to be Red Bull, pretty much like every track we visit, unfortunately, because it's starting to get a little bit tedious having one team dominating. But it's a high-speed track. There's some unusual corners. There's banked corners there, which we don't see that often in Formula One. But when they kind of gave new life to this circuit, brought it back on the Formula One calendar, they kind of really adjusted some of the corners, made them quite banked. So it's pretty unique. And yeah, there's some opportunities to overtake. It can be tricky around parts of the circuit. We're going to see how they go this year, because they've really struggled with that in other places. So whether they can maximize use of DRS and get past into turn one. Behind that, I don't know. I mean, it's high speed, so you kind of feel that maybe McLaren could be quick again, because we've seen prior to the summer break that they looked very good in high speed corners. The areas where they struggled were on very long straights, and also in low speed corners. There are definitely low speed corners at Zandvoort as well, but there's not that many long straights. So I feel like, McLaren will be looking to just solidify this position they've got themselves into as one of the main challengers behind Red Bull. And then I think, you know, it's been the same all year between Aston Martin, Mercedes and Ferrari. You never quite know which team's going to emerge as the best. And actually, it often comes down to mistakes either in setting up the car during practice or just operational mistakes during qualifying in the race that make the difference in terms of where those cars end up and in what order.
The team currently sitting in sixth out of the five that he was just able to mention, Nate, is Alpine. It's fair to say that they've currently struggled all this season. Hopefully summer break was an opportunity for them to reset themselves, but what do you feel like they need to do to be able to catch up to the likes of a McLaren, potentially then even Ferrari and Aston?
I think if you look at Alpine, they're the one team that probably, sometimes you say a team needs half time during a game, you know, an NFL game or a soccer game. I think Alpine really needed the summer break just because of everything that happened in those weeks before. And a lot of it, to be honest with you, is happening away from Formula One. You know, it's personnel stuff. Otmar Szafnauer has left. Lauren Rossi has also left from his role of overseeing the team. So I think similar to at the start of the season, when Rossi first called the team out for, you know, for the performances, I think what they just need strong, solid results. And at the moment, I don't think that that's going to be, you know, up there challenging with those teams. But I think what they need to do is be finishing races, getting both those guys good points, because we've seen, you know, their season's been so inconsistent. You know, they had that podium in Monaco with Ocon. But really, if you've looked since then, it's been really up and down. So I think this next spell, I'm not really expecting huge amounts from Alpine. It seems that they're just kind of, they went into the summer break, and you could tell they were, you know, if you spoke to people at the team, they were kind of like, oh yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks. So I think good results, get the momentum back. And then luckily for Alpine, I think where they're in a good position is that Aston at the start of the year and McLaren more recently have shown that if you focus, you know, the right way on your upgrade, you can make really big gains under this cost cap and under these rules. So I think that for everything going on behind the scenes, it's not like it's doom and gloom for Alpine, but I think we've spoken about it before. I'm not 100% sure what Renault's purpose is in Formula One with the Alpine brand. It seems very strange. So I think there's a lot of questions externally that they need to answer. But I think that the way to start doing that is to just, you know, focus on the results, get things back on track, and then go into next year in a much better position. Because I think for the short term, they don't look like they're in that good of a position, I don't think.
Yeah, I think above all else, they need a team principal, right? I mean, Omar Szafnauer is no longer there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a really strange situation to have a team that, you know, a lot of the senior staff have gone or on their way out. Alain Permain, who'd been there for years as sporting director, also left after the Belgian Grand Prix along with Otmar. And then Pat Fry's on his way to Williams. And you know, they've got some good people there, but really, who's leading it, and what direction are they heading? And it seems that the Renault and the kind of Alpine higher ups decided that this plan to kind of attempt to be successful from about 2026 onwards, because that's the most realistic timescale, and even that seemed like quite a short timescale, wasn't quick enough. But then they've made that decision without finding out a way to, or finding someone to make it happen. So at the moment, you've got Bruno Famin, who's come in, and you know, I'm not entirely sure, based on his performance in the press conference at Belgium, that he's really got this brilliant plan in place. He kept talking about the plan for the wider Alpine brand and the phases that they're in, but it's all nonsense when it comes to Formula One, because in Formula One, you know, you need clear leadership, you need a strong technical direction. And while I think that can exist under the technical director Matt Harmon at Alpine, I think, you know, there's going to be so much uncertainty now within Alpine, among people within that company. And anyone who's been at a company during a major reshuffle knows how difficult that can be when you're worrying about your own job to the point that, you know, you maybe don't perform to the level that you can be. And then because there are a lot of very talented people at Alpine, there's also a lot of other teams hungry to poach the best ones. So, you know, I think it's a difficult situation, because we've already seen that with Pat Fry going to Williams, and yeah, it's hard to know where that all ends up. And I feel like at a time when Alpine were slipping a little bit but still had potential, now I just can't see their route to the front of the grid. While you've got teams like Aston Martin and McLaren making big steps, Mercedes we always know are going to be strong, Ferrari should always be strong. And then I just don't see how Alpine fits into that top three anymore, top four or top five or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, and this is the problem with Alpine as well, that if this had just been a one-off, like if this year had happened in isolation and you'd look back and said, okay, well, they've had a lot of stability for years and years and years, and this really came out of the blue, but clearly, you know, they've had to reset things, I think it would be a bit easier to stomach. But the one team in Formula One that has not had any stability for the last few years has been Alpine. You know, there's been so many changes at leadership level. Mm-hmm. And I think you're really starting to see the, you know, the payoff of that now. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes. If you look at McLaren, for example, there's been a lot of changes there. But I feel like the last one that Zak Brown made, when, you know, Stella came in, they've restructured the technical department there. It was very decisive. You know, it was very much, this is, you know, a big change. What we've seen from Alpine, exactly as Lawrence has mentioned, it's kind of, at the moment, they're just a rudderless ship. And I'm not really sure that they've thought out the steps coming up. So worrying given Alpine's history, because they've never really, if you look at the drivers that have left that team, Sainz, obviously Piastri went to McLaren, Alonso and Ricciardo are guys who have left as well. You get a sense that even drivers were getting into the team and thinking, you know, this team's just going nowhere. So that has to be fixed. You know, that, you know, in the short and the long term, I don't think Alpine are going to be anything until they kind of give off that kind of, you know, I suppose that confident look, or that look of a team that is, you know, is all going in one direction. Because at the moment, I don't think the team really knows where it's headed.
Well, it's a lack of continuity, right? And they're now feeling the ramifications of that. I'm curious, do you guys remember a time where you've seen two prominent team members of management leave in the middle of the season? I mean, I feel like we're used to seeing bombshells break in terms of drivers moving seats for the next year when we get to summer break. But can you think of a time where there was upper management like this in such high level positions leaving at a summer break inflection point?
It's rare. I'm sure there's a good example from a few years ago, but usually this happens kind of in the quiet of the off season. You know, and if you think about Binotto was a good example of that, you know, mm-hmm. leaving at Ferrari, it was kind of done, you know, at a time when, again, I guess you're away from that question. It was so bizarre with Alpine, because Safnauer, that following day, myself and two other journalists, we walked down the paddock talking to Otmar about the fact that he'd just been fired. It was so strange. And he was kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm leaving after. And it was just really weird. It's like the way the whole thing has been handled, again, I think speaks to the situation behind the scenes and just kind of where that team's at, because they'd waited 5 days, 3 days. They could have done it on the first Monday of the summer mm-hmm. break. They've got 3 weeks where we'd still be talking about it come this weekend, but mm-hmm. the sting would have come out the story a little bit. And I'm just, yeah, the whole thing's just a bit strange.
Lawrence, do you see a landing spot for Otmar Safnauer moving forward?
I think he said that he's not allowed to take another F1 role for at least a year.
Which a non-compete?
a non-compete clause, gardening leave, that kind of thing. So, but I think he certainly could find himself back in Formula One eventually, or in a different role within the sport, maybe, or around the sport. You know, he's got a long history of working for a variety of teams and also setting up some of his own businesses. So I think he's got he's got potential to work in a number of roles. But I guess if he's on some kind of gardening leave for a year, then that's maybe not such a bad place to be either.
Yeah. Look at Daniel Ricciardo, thought he was taking a year and now he's already back. So we'll see. Anything could happen, depending
on
both,
what the contract they're says. Both big stars of Netflix as well, Otmar and Daniel. So
they are. No better, no more riveting of a scene than him packing for the weekend in his closet.
Yeah. That was weirdly compelling, wasn't it, seeing somebody do that? It was strange.
I don't know what it was, but why it was added, who knows? Okay, let's switch gears to Ferrari.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Obviously, Charles Leclerc went into the summer break with the podium, strong finish at Spa. He finished third at Zandvoort last year. What do we think, Lawrence, of Ferrari's chances coming into this weekend and Charles Leclerc's in particular?
Yeah, I think the result and the performance in Spa was positive. Of course, Leclerc technically got a pole position there. It was because Max Verstappen had his gearbox penalty. But even so, the Ferrari started on pole for a second time this year, started a Grand Prix on pole. So, I think that's positive. But the whole season for Ferrari has just been this massive underperformance, especially in races. I think they've only had three podiums in the 12 races, 12 Grand Prix so far this year. And that's not enough for a team like Ferrari's. So there's some serious work to do. I was on a press call with Fred Vasseur on the day we were recording, but we've got a bit of an embargo till this evening, but I'm sure by the time this goes out, the embargo will have lifted. Yeah. So I'll get in there anyway. And basically he was saying that compared to Red Bull, there's not one area where he thinks they're behind, because it'd be very easy to look at it and say, well, you just need the extra downforce on the car and it needs to be, looking after its tires a little bit better, because we know that's been an issue. But he just believes every single facet of Ferrari needs to be made a small amount better, but certainly better to some extent. And that will make the difference. But to me, that sounds incredibly tough, because if it was just one thing that they could focus on and they knew there was just this big kind of gap in somewhere in their performance to Red Bull, that seems easier to me than trying to look at every single part of the company and up it. And then, of course, while you're doing that, Red Bull aren't standing still. So even if you are just, he was talking about, fractions of a tenth off in various different little ways. Well, that's all well and good, but Red Bull's going to find those fractions of a tenth on top as well in the next year. So it's this ongoing frustration that I know Nate has often mentioned on this podcast with Ferrari, and just where they are and when will they finally break this however many years drought it is since 2007 of not winning a driver's title. And I just cannot see the end of it right now. 2022 seemed like a really good opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then we felt, well, okay, it didn't go well in 22. Perhaps I learned their lessons, and 23 will be the year. I've said this before as well. We turned up at the launch. They were saying they were targeting a championship. And then it wasn't long after in testing when we realized that it just wasn't going to be the case. So it's kind of incremental improvements they need over the course of this year. They won't have a major upgrade at either of the next two races. I think they've got race specific stuff, but not a huge one. But apparently there is something coming before the end of the year, which I hope will make a step. And then they're kind of using similar ideas and concepts going forward into 24, but they've got a brand new chassis and gearbox, as you probably expect of a big team going forward. And so, yeah, that's all the stuff that they're working on now, trying to make sure it's in a spot to challenge Red Bull in 24. But I don't know. I think it's going to be tough.
Nate, do you have anything to add? I don't want to make you hot under the collar, so I can switch. No,
I'll stay calm about Ferrari. I was just thinking, take me back to that Ferrari launch day. Do you remember that this year when they had the live stream event in Italy, and everyone was saying the best launch of, you know, of recent memory? It was great. There was a glimmer, as Lawrence mentioned, a glimmer of there could be something here. But no, I think nail on the head perfectly. I think the thing that's crazy about Ferrari this year is when you keep thinking about where they were 12 months ago, even by this point last year, we knew the championship was slipping away from them, but they still felt comfortably the second quickest team. And now that fight, you know, the gap to Red Bull's got bigger. When the fight behind has got even more busy with McLaren there, Aston's finished ahead of them, Mercedes has finished ahead of them at some points, and now McLaren's moved ahead. I know they keep changing positions, so doesn't really seem like they're moving in the right direction at all when you compare to where they've come from. Because, you know, last year, even though they were making mistakes left, right, and center, they had a really good package there. It just doesn't seem to be, they haven't really brought it into this year. So I think frustrating is the right word that Lawrence used, and I think that's the one word that you would use consistently for Ferrari since Kimi won that championship in 07, because it just keeps on. They just keep failing to deliver, don't they? Year after year. So not sure where they go from here, but I assume next year we'll be talking the same thing year after. I think at this point, it seemed like Ferrari, you start to, and I wonder what Lawrence thinks about this as well, but you almost in your head start to think, well, they need to start looking at 2026, because that Red Bull are so far ahead at this point, you know. It's and if Fred Vasseur is already saying we're behind in, you know, in small areas all over the place, exactly what Lawrence was saying there, you're not going to catch them overnight. They're not just going to be sitting still. So it's crazy to think that Ferrari, you know, you've almost got to turn your attention to what's that 2.5 years down the road and say we have to come out of 26 in a kind of a position where we came out in 22 with the best car. I mean, it's a very defeatist attitude to think that, but for me, that seems to be the most logical point for Charles Leclerc, for Carlos Sainz, if they do stay at the team, to win a championship in red, because I can't see it happening before then.
Is that realistic, that they need to just turn their sights to 2026, Lawrence?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, actually, you know, perhaps all teams should be really considering that. You know, because you think that you've got, this year is a write-off. No, we're lucky if any other team wins a race this year. To then think that one of them's going to turn it around for 2024 is optimistic, and it would require something big. So it's hard to say from the outside. If you're working within one of those teams and you know you've got a project that is going to release a huge amount of downforce performance on the car, then sure, go for it. But if you're looking at it and you're really struggling to figure out how you're going to make that step, then 2026, you know, it's two seasons. But when we've looked at other teams make big steps, you know, I mean, Mercedes is the obvious example. When they did it in 2014, you know, they did have a few years of preparing themselves, building up, and then, you know, setting their sights on that 2014 season when the regulations changed to make the difference. And 2026, not dissimilar, big engine changes. So, you know, that's another thing which Ferrari have got to get right. They certainly didn't get the last major engine regulation change right in 2014. So, you know, there is a lot going on there. And I think, you know, If Ferrari can create a bit of stability, a bit of, you know, release some of the pressure on the team, but make sure there is an absolute focus that 2026 is the year, then perhaps that is the best strategy. But, you know, that's probably the reason I'm not a team principal and Fred Vasseur is, because I'm sure he would turn around and say, you know, don't be ridiculous. We've got two opportunities from now to win championships.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think all the teams are going to start doing that as well. So you're going to have a bunch of teams who, I think, if we have a season next year like this year, it's going to be very easy for teams to say, rather than us pushing everything to 25, let's just kind of see 25 as a bit of a write-off and you move that over. So you're going to have a lot of teams doing that. So 26 is going to be genuinely very interesting for that reason. You know, McLaren, who I know we're going to talk about in a little bit, you know, they finally feel like they've got everything right behind the scenes. Mercedes, obviously, are still playing catch-up, trying to get back to the front. Aston Martin, you know, we know that now they're a team to be taken seriously. So you wonder, with Ferrari in there, you know, are they good enough to come out ahead of just those teams. And then you add Red Bull in. Red Bull, I think, are going to struggle at the next set of regs. But I don't know if Ferrari is the next best team placed to win that. But again, as I think it's right as well, I'm not a team boss, and my recent performances on F1 Manager show why that's the case. My teams haven't really made much progress, so I'm sure Ferrari and Fred Vasseur won't be listening much to what I'm saying.
And I don't think F1 fans will love what either of you are saying either, because it doesn't make for necessarily compelling.
Yeah, racing. I was just thinking we're not going to be hired as press officers for Ferrari anytime soon, or cheerleaders or anything like that. But I think it's just a realistic, you know, viewpoint. I'd love someone to prove us wrong next year, obviously.
Sure.
But this dominance we're seeing right now is, you know, it's, you know, all hats off to Red Bull, but it's just so dominant, and it is difficult to see a change to that anytime soon.
Well, I think a team that obviously wants to continue to build and maybe could be a legit challenger next season is McLaren. They've obviously had an overnight change in the way that they're racing and the performances from Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. Nate, I think you had a fascinating conversation with team CEO Zach Brown. Some pretty intense, I would say, but very, very truthful comments came from the conversation. Do you care to share just what that conversation was like with him?
Yeah, it's really good. And we've got some more stuff coming this week. One news story we ran last week, he said, and I can read the quote here, is if Red Bull had two Sergios in the car, with all due respect, this championship would be kind of wide open. And I think, don't think there's many people in the paddock who would disagree with that. But to hear a rival CEO say it, and there was more, wasn't there, to it. So, yeah, you've got something pretty special going on with Max and Red Bull. So I think he was making the point that Red Bull's far ahead, but you put Max in there and it's kind of that special ingredient. But it is interesting with Zach, because he still thinks they can challenge in 2025. So everything we've been saying, he feels now they're in the right position to do that. They've obviously been making these steps forward. But he said every single team that's not Red Bull is going to be looking at 2026, because it's difficult to overcome that challenge. And he said everyone's now looking, do we have everything we need in place for 26? McLaren feels like they do. They've got James Keyes left. They've restructured the technical department. They've got David Sanchez, Rob Marshall, one from Ferrari, one from Red Bull coming in to join that committee soon. So they're a really good example of what a team needs to look at doing long term. But yeah, it was fascinating. And Zach's he spoke quite candidly about McLaren and the fact they struggled this year. He said, obviously, mm-hmm. There was a lot of pressure on him, a lot of pressure always to deliver in Formula One. And what was interesting, what he said, and I'd be fascinated to know if this is the case with other teams, he said, things started to feel bad at McLaren last year, but they didn't look too bad on track. They didn't look great, but they were still in a good fight with Alpine. Lando was doing well. The issue was really with Daniel. But he said behind the scenes, he could feel things weren't really great. So fast forward to preseason, get to preseason testing. They were woeful in preseason testing, all sorts of problems with the car. But Zach said to me that by then, even though things looked bad, he said they were starting to feel a lot better. He said, that by then, Andreas Seidel had left to go to Sauber. So he'd been able to bring Andreas Stöller in. James Key was already kind of on the way out at that point. It did look like a knee-jerk reaction, but from what Zach said, it seemed like the wheels were already in motion coming out of the off-season into pre-season. So really interesting, but he said it took that long. It took a whole year almost from it feeling bad, then feeling good, to being good, for them to really turn things around. And even then, turning things around was going from midfield to second. It shows you just how much you've got to do. So it was a fascinating chat. And sorry, I've just gone round and round about there, your question, Katie, about the talk, because it started off with that talk about Sergio. And I think to come back to that point, he certainly feels that the dominance that we're talking about wouldn't be so bad if Max wasn't in the car. Maybe he's a big part of that as well. And I hope that's true. I hope that it is the case that Red Bull aren't actually as far ahead as they look. Because if those teams can close that gap and then we start to see that it is a lot closer, then all the doom and gloom that we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes might not come true.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay. The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, we've obviously documented well on this podcast the woes that Sergio Perez has obviously endured over this season. He finished second, 22 seconds off of his teammate at Spa. So obviously a great result for Red Bull. Lawrence, do you feel like that's true, though? If we did have two Sergio Perez's or somebody similar to him in the other seat at Red Bull, that this thing would be a wide open race for first?
Well, at the start of the summer break, I actually ran the maths on what would happen if you remove Max from the title and bumped everyone up a position from wherever they finished. And then also what happened if you removed the Red Bulls entirely. And if you remove Max by himself, Perez would be leading the championship by 37 points from Fernando Alonso, which it would be quite a lot considering that the Red Bull is as good as it is. And all you'd think is like all Checo needs to do is get his head down and he could win this title. But because it's Fernando Alonso in that car behind, you'd probably be thinking there's half a chance. And Hamilton would only be 1 point behind Alonso in a pretty competitive car as well. So, it would be pretty cool. And then if you removed both Red Bulls, you'd have this incredible battle between Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton with about kind of 30-odd points separating them. And wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, it's actually, it would be less than that. It would be.
Let's just call off this Red Bull stuff. Let's just have that. That'd be great.
Exactly. As Fred Vasseur said earlier today, actually, he's like, well, wait a minute. It's all well and good saying how Ferrari is doing compared to the likes of Mercedes and Aston Martin and all that kind of stuff. But we live in a world where Red Bull exists and you cannot remove them. And whatever they're doing with the car and whatever Max is doing in that car is very much part of the reality of F1. So it is a bit fanciful to talk about it in that way, but certainly I think what it underlines is just how good Max has been this year. Certainly after those first four races where he had a bit of bad luck that went against him, and it looked like Checo on occasion might have the measure of him on certain types of track. And then it was really from Miami onwards where he beat Checo in a straight fight. He's just accelerated and become so at one with this car that it's almost impossible to imagine anyone other winning a race at the moment. I mean, we haven't had it since round four in Azerbaijan when Checo won. So I think that's really what it underlines is while it's interesting to do, the maths on it and figure out what a potentially brilliant championship we could have, the reality is Max is there and he's doing this brilliant job. And a bit of that has, we have to give him credit for that, absolutely. And we also, I think, even if you're not a Max fan, appreciate that what you're witnessing is pretty special, which takes us back to what we're talking about at the start of the year and him probably about to match and possibly break Sebastian Vettel's record for most wins in a row.
No fantasies here as Max Verstappen goes for his ninth consecutive Grand Prix win. That leaves us with predictions. And I think that I can safely say we're all going to choose Max Verstappen to stand atop that podium for his home race. So give me your second and third picks, Lawrence Edmondson.
Okay.
Unless you want to do something crazy and there's a DNF or something, or you have someone ousting Max Verstappen, but I don't think you will.
No, I think Max winning at home, it just feels like it's going to happen. Right? I felt for a while that maybe something's going to go wrong and it clearly hasn't. So my gut feeling is clearly not right.
Yeah, Lawrence has been pretty strong on the whole something will happen, but I think even the most hardened person who thinks that is now looking at it and like, this looks pretty damn good. I mean, it still obviously could, but this is because Perez, while he's been struggling, the car hasn't really, neither car's really shown many reliability issues, have they?
Yeah, and we even saw the gearbox penalty creep in Spa and knock him back five places on the grid. But you feel with Max, like even if he gets a full, engine penalty where he starts from the back of the grid, he's still got a chance. It depends on the track, perhaps not at Zandvoort, but also I really doubt they're in any risk of needing to take a full engine penalty in Zandvoort. So yes, Max Verstappen, to cut a very long story there, sure, to win the race. And we'll go for Charles Leclerc second. I'm going to say Ferrari, should be quick there again. And then Lando Norris third.
I like it. Nice.
No love for Perez.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I correctly predicted Perez would be second in Spa, so I gave him his juice there. And I think there's a few occasions where I've even predicted Perez wins, and it's not happened. So, yeah, my Perez faith has been it's been shattered by poor results this year. So I don't feel too bad about that one.
Nate,
I'm going to stick with Verstappen, obviously up for number one, but Lando second, I think. High speeds, McLaren clearly have made a huge step forward. And Lewis third, I think. It'd be nice to see. Lewis, this is one of the races Lewis nearly won last year, or was in the mix of winning. I feel like Mercedes will be fairly strong.
I like it.
But it'll be good. There's obviously lots of orange in the crowd for Max, but Lando, if he just tricks his brain a little bit, he can pretend it's just a one massive McLaren loving.
They're all for you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just ignore the fact that it's clearly for Max. But
I like the psychology there. Okay, I'm going to go with Max as well at the start. Okay, I'm going to go with Norris, and then I'm going to go with Oscar Piastri. I think it's time.
Yeah, nice.
I think it's time. He's raced well, and it just hasn't necessarily fallen his way, but he's been brilliant, I think, in that car.
Yeah, he's due a podium, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He definitely deserves one. I think that's a good call. I think it'd be great for the season. It's always nice when somebody gets their first podium. It's a nice story. And Piastri, he looks absolutely mega, doesn't he, from the last few races. So
he does. And a nice story for you guys to write about. Who's going? Both of you?
We'll both be there.
We'll be there, yeah.
When are you leaving?
I think we're on the same train tomorrow. Well, Wednesday morning. So when people listen to this, we'll already be in Zandvoort.
Time coded this. Oops. We're recording on a Tuesday.
Whoopsie, we've shattered the illusion. The whole thing's ruined. I mean, I love this race. You stay in Amsterdam, which is a really, really cool city. The trains in Amsterdam are fantastic. The Dutch, there's a lot of things they do very, very well. One thing is their trains, especially if you live in England at the moment, our trains are an absolute nightmare. The trains in Amsterdam, they leave like clockwork. They just fill them up. They leave. The next one comes in, fill it up. They leave. Really, really well organized. And we both, for the all 3 years we've done this race now, stayed in the same hotel. And I always talk about it, and I think Lawrence gets fed up with me by about 3 hours in to the first day. But you walk from the hotel, and you get a little foot ferry over the river to the station. So everyone walks on, or they cycle on. And it's basically just a ferry that takes you across this river. It takes about 2 minutes, but I love it. It's a great start to the day.
A foot ferry, just a standing room, kind of like barge that you just are taking across. Yeah,
on, and all a lot of them are there on their bikes, and they have these bikes in the Netherlands where they have giant seating areas at the front. So people that are taking their kids to school can just plonk the kids in and just cycle them in. So it's, they love their bikes over there. So you're just kind of squeezed in with all of them. But it's nice. It's just a good vibe to the whole thing.
All right, I can see it. Lawrence is tapped out. I wish you both safe travels on your train. Enjoy Zandvoort, okay? Can't wait to see who is right in their predictions. It's race week, baby. Thanks for listening to Unlapped.